the Lye FAP meeting and hope everyone is staying cool. It's nice that the last couple of days the weather's been a little bit cooler. We can get outside and enjoy it a little bit more. So I am going to start with a roll call, and I know there are people joining us as we go along. So if I miss somebody, please let me know that. Tonight's icebreaker, when I call your name, tonight's icebreaker is tell us a weird fact that you know that you'd like to share with us that you think maybe somebody else doesn't know. So what's a weird fact that you know? And this is an icebreaker that was suggested by Dr. Melnick. So and then he doesn't show up to share his weird fact. And I wrote it down, but I don't know what I did with his weird fact. Anyway, so let's get started. Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Here. Hi. Oh, am I? Do I need to tell my fact?
Yes, you do.
In my anatomy class, I didn't learn, but that was really interesting. You have a bone in your skull that looks like a butterfly, and it's called your sphenoid bone.
Okay, not the butterfly bone.
Looks like it. Yeah, it's really cool.
Good. All
That's
right.
my weird, cool fact.
Okay, we're all going to learn something tonight. All right, Alma Bloom.
So I just learned this yesterday. So you guys know about the CrowdStrike issue that caused like basically most of the world to go at a standstill. That only happened with 1% of all the computers.
Wow. But look how 1% of the computers affected the world. It's
Exactly.
a little scary, isn't it? All right, thank you for that. Emily.
Hi.
Hi.
I was recently modeling single year birth rates all the way back to we only have good data from like the 60s, but we have some from the 40s and we can kind of model from the 1900s. This is an interesting thing for this forum. The US birth rate for adult women is actually the highest it's ever been since the baby boom right now. The reason we see the other the reason we see the other numbers is because we're seeing like 15 to 44, but if you only consider women who are 20 to 44 or 20 and up, like for adult women, the birth rate is actually really, really high right now. And I just think that's really interesting because we basically ended teen pregnancy, and that's the only reason it looks really low.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Emily. Franklin Johnson, are you on yet? I don't see him. We'll come back. Chief Morey.
Present.
Morey.
I guess my weird factoid for the night is the very first recognized local law enforcement person for the Pacific, actually was the Oregon Territory still, was a man by the name of Joe Meek, who became the sheriff of what was then the Oregon Territory, eventually became Tualatin County, eventually became Washington County, which is where I started my law enforcement career. And his great, 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 great nephew is the current undersheriff at the Washington County Sheriff's Office. So that's two weird factoids.
That is all wrapped into one. Thanks. Dr. Fisher.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. My career started actually in the paper industry. And so in the United States, trees are almost never cut down for the sole purpose of producing paper. Paper is usually produced as a byproduct of the lumber industry, with the exception of premium bath tissue or toilet paper, which frequently is made with eucalyptus fiber sourced from South America.
Interesting. All right, thank you. Dr. Dauphin.
The fact I was thinking about, I just came home from the dentist and I now have to have a root canal tomorrow morning. But my fact that I don't think anyone else probably knows is that cats have about the same number of teeth as people. Adult cats have 30 teeth, but adult dogs have 42 teeth, which is almost 1.5 times as many. And that's why little dogs have such bad dental disease, because they're just doomed because of the small size.
Okay. Dr. Trong. Don't see him yet. Lori. Lori?
Hi, and it's Schott, like
Hi, Lori.
SHOT. That's I put as many letters in there as possible, apparently. So,
Sorry about
no,
that.
it's, so Lori Schott, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm with the YWCA, and this is my first meeting. So this is an old factoid for me, and it's probably something you all know because you have the medical training that I don't, but I remember being fascinated, by noticing on soda pop cans, it would have the warning for phenylketonuric. And I don't drink pop much anymore, but I, when it said the ones that contain phenylalanine, and I thought, that is a huge word on a soda pop can. That, anyway, so I'll try and do better next time for it.
You're fine. Welcome to your first meeting. Mark Collier. Let's see, Mark. Marla Singer.
I think this is also one that people know, but I witnessed it recently, and that is where we just were in Southeast Alaska. There's a lot of ravens and also some crows, but I'd say probably quite a bit more ravens. But they have a lot of very social behaviors, and one of the things that I've witnessed more than once is when they come, they'll come to the beach to look for food, and sometimes people will dump their stuff that's left over after they've cleaned their fish, and then of course they know to come there because there's lots of good stuff that they like to eat. But if there's one of them that is injured, the other ones will actually pick up food and bring it to the injured one, or they will try to make it easier for that one to get to the food. And it was interesting to watch, and I've seen it two or three times, different times over the years. And so I decided it's not my imagination. They're really trying to take care of each other when one of them is injured.
Neat. All right. Thanks, Marla. Michael Watkins.
Good evening, Sandy. And I apologize, I'm driving, so I just jumped on, so I don't know the question you were asking folks.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question is, what is a weird fact that you know that you'd like to share with us?
I don't know if it's a weird fact. I guess it's something that just comes to mind because I was just talking to somebody about it. The life expectancy for males on the reservation where I come from is only 48 years old.
Wow.
And it's one of the lowest in the country, so, and in the world. So just a fact. I don't know that it's a great fact to share, but just to give a perspective of life on the reservation.
That's a good fact. Well, thanks, Michael, and drive safely. Nissa Buchanan. Nissa, are you there? Might have stepped away for a minute. I see her name there. Paul Childers. Is Paul here tonight? Let's see him. Peggy Carlson. See her either. Robert Ferrier.
Here. I don't know if it's
Ferrier.
interesting or not, and I don't know why I thought of this, but my wife's family is from the southwest part of the state of Iowa. And if you've been to that part of the country, you know it's just filled with cornfields as far as the eye can see. And I was told by her family there that most of that corn is not grown for human consumption. It's actually grown for hogs. They consume it. I don't know if that's interesting or not, but and I don't know why I thought of that, but there you go.
There you go. Well, it's a fact. All right, Sandy Brown. My interesting or weird fact is that A person eats over 3,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in their lifetime. So either we ate them as a child or we continue to eat them through a lifetime, but 3,000 sounded like a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. All right.
Sandy, this is Nissa. I'm sorry. I couldn't get my phone to work. I'm multitasking tonight and I couldn't figure out how to get myself off mute.
All right. Well, I said I'd come back because I saw your name there. All right,
Sorry, I'm technologically not too savvy. My fun fact is that Queen Elizabeth and Marilyn Monroe were born the same year. And I don't know why I find that fascinating, but they didn't seem the same age to me ever, so.
Nissa. No. Interesting. All right. Let's see. Scott Johnson, did we miss you?
In Skamania County, Washington, it is a violation of county code to shoot Sasquatch.
Okay. We wouldn't want to hurt him or her.
So it is an official county ordinance. It is a violation to shoot Bigfoot in Skamania County.
All right. You better not venture outside the Skamania County. All right. Tracy Fernandez.
Yes, somebody told me this recently, and I thought it was interesting that ants can carry up to 50 times their body weight. So that's the equivalent of an average human carrying nine, lifting 9,000 pounds.
Ooh.
So ants are tough, and they can withstand pressure of up to 5,000 times their body weight.
Wow.
Right?
Well, we better start lifting weights, huh?
Right.
All right. Thanks, Tracy. Tyler Clary.
Yeah, I read recently something, I don't know why it stuck with me, but that a tongue of a blue whale weighs almost as much as an elephant.
Okay. Cute. Councillor Marshall.
Thanks. Weird fact has to do with moles. These are moles, not on your face, but underground. And they're venomous and they paralyze their worms that are their prey and store them in a cache.
Okay, cool. Andrea Pruitt.
Hi, everybody. My fact is bromelain is an enzyme that is found in fresh pineapple that functions in its natural state to denature protein. So it can be used to tenderize complete proteins like meat. I don't know if anybody is of the generation or Midwestern roots for Jell-O salads, but the reason why you might have seen people who were doing cooking in your home boil pineapple juice or cook fresh pineapple before adding it to those lovely dishes is to denature the enzyme so it doesn't prohibit the jello from setting. So it's always a little reason why those
Just
recipes
don't
have
put
that
it in your
process.
jello.
That would be a start.
That's
Can't
right. All right. Thanks,
forget.
Andrea. Jeff Harbison.
So not very interesting, I don't think, but it's the only I can think of. Los Angeles County has 88 cities and 130 unincorporated areas within it.
Okay. We'll start trying to visit each one, right? Mallory.
Hi. I recently learned that sloths can hold their breath longer than dolphins. Dolphins have to come up every 10 minutes, and sloths can hold their breath up to 40 minutes underwater.
Wow, I didn't know sloths could go in water. They're usually up in trees. All right, did I miss anybody? I think that's everybody that's on my screen.
Adiba is our guest speaker this evening. Adiba, would you like to introduce yourself in advance of the
Sorry.
presentation and share your fun factoid?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Adiba Ali, and I'm one of the epidemiologists at Clark County Public Health. I feel like because we analyze data, we learn all sorts of weird facts of every week. But I'll share something not health data related. We recently got back from a trip from South Asia in Bangladesh, and we ate jackfruit every day and didn't know that jackfruit is one of the biggest, heaviest, or I think is the biggest, heaviest fruit in the world. It can grow up to 100 pounds, and we got to stroll through, yeah, forests of jackfruit trees. It was really fun. So,
all right, thank you. Welcome. I'm sorry I missed you in the roll call. So, all right, I want to welcome Lori again. I think you attended our last meeting, and I want to welcome you again. And then I'd like to introduce Tracy Fernandez, who is another one of our new members. And just a short little facts about her is that for more than about 30 years, she's provided financial and operational leadership in the healthcare realm, both here in Washington, for the last few years, and also in a couple of different places in California. And we really want to welcome Tracy to our FAT group, and I really look forward to getting to know you. And I'll give you a couple minutes if you want to share anything else about you.
No, I've lived in California most of my life, worked in healthcare most of my career, and luck brought me to the beautiful state of Washington about 4 years ago, when I joined Peace Health. And initially, it was quite a struggle for me with all the rain coming from sunny, dry California, but I think I've grown to appreciate it. I love the green, and it's definitely not something you see in California. And I'm still trying to get adjusted to the little bit slower driving pace here in Washington than California. But I appreciate you all welcoming me to the committee, and I look forward to serving on it. So thank you.
Great. Well, rain brings green, but we have had some hot days, so maybe it reminds you of being in California.
Yes, for sure.
So welcome. We did have a new member orientation last Friday, of which Dr. Chong was able to attend, and he's not here tonight. Tracy was busy with a little computer glitch in the world on Friday, so she'll be joining Lori on the 9th of August for our orientation at that time. So anyway, we welcome you and look forward to having your insights into our issues. Mallory, do we have any public comments?
We do not.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on then. At this time, I'm going to introduce Andrea and for a presentation on the opioid morbidity and mortality data. And this is information that's going to be presented at the next Board of Health meeting, which typically is the day after our meetings, but it's been postponed till next week. So, but we get a little preview of what's going to be presented, and I'm going to be interested to hear your information. So, Andrea?
Thanks so much, Sandy. I'm going to turn it over to Adiba for the formal presentation. Just one slight edit. This is a presentation on drug overdose trends, which includes opioids, but we'll also be reviewing and discussing other drug trend data with you this evening. And this topic will be a part of a multi-part series of presentations that we'll be providing to FAC and Board of Health over the remainder of 2024 and likely into 2025, because it's a really big topic that we have multiple partners and service providers working across the area and community. So tonight we're really going to start with presentation about data, and then we'll go from there and answer any questions that you have. So Adiba, you introduced yourself earlier, so I will transition over. Mallory, if you could help us with the slide deck, and Adiba, take it away.
Thank you. Yeah, so like Andrea said, today we're going to provide an overview about drug overdose trends in Clark County. Next slide. Yeah, so we'll start by sharing an overview of all the different data sources we use to track drug overdose and the different reporting frequencies that each data source has. And then we'll go over some of the fatal and non-fatal trend data. And then we'll talk a little bit about how we use that data for prevention efforts internally and externally. So just to start off, just want to talk about public health surveillance broadly. When we say surveillance in public health, we are talking about the ongoing systematic collection, analysis, interpretation, and dissemination of health-related data for the purpose of informing public health practice. And so this flow chart is a simplified visual of how health-related events are captured and how they're reported through systems. Like I said, we access our data from a variety of different sources, and you know, some of this data come from our local communities, our hospitals, labs, schools, or other community agencies. And then the data come to us in a variety of formats, either through national data platforms or processed through our state Department of Health, or sometimes data are shared directly to our department by local agencies here. And so part of our work, the epidemiologists on our team, our work is to kind of process all of that data, clean, analyze, and report for public consumption for policymakers, and then to help plan and inform prevention activities. And so, like I said, today we're going to talk about overdose data, and I don't know if some of you have seen the overdose dashboard that's on our website, but that's an example of a public data product that's been developed by our team that compiles a variety of data sources to help understand the issue of drug overdose in our community. And so this is a list of some of the data sources specific to drug overdose. We're not going to have data from all of these sources in our presentation tonight, but I just wanted to provide a sense of kind of the breadth of sources and the type of data that's collected. So in the top, we have our prescription monitoring program. This is data that is entered by licensed pharmacies and practitioners that dispense controlled substances in the state of Washington. And they are required to electronically report prescription data. This data source doesn't collect hospital inpatient dispensing data or administration of substances. But from this data source, we're able to track, you know, for example, the number of people receiving opioid prescriptions, and we're able to drill down to things like how many people are receiving long-term opioid prescriptions, first-time opioid prescriptions, high-dose prescribing, et cetera. And this data is available on the State Department of Health website. So the next set of data sources we have listed here from CRESA, from the Washington Emergency Medical Services, and then our hospitals, these series of data sources give us a sense of non-fatal overdose in our community. We're not capturing every overdose happening in our community, but it's those that are interfacing either through CRESA, through you know, calls for service through 911, if they received services from our emergency medical staff, and then if they went to the emergency department or were hospitalized for inpatient hospitalization. And then finally, our last set of data sources that we have look really at mortality, the impact of overdose on mortality. And that data come from our medical examiner's office, our death certificate data that's processed through the state and national centers for health statistics. And then there's some sources that look at a combination of data sources. And this last source listed here, SUDERS, really is a system, a CDC-funded effort where qualitative circumstantial data are compiled from medical examiner death investigation, from our public safety partners, to really have a little bit more of an in-depth understanding of the circumstances around drug overdose deaths. So now we'll dive into some of the data, and we'll start by focusing on some of the fatality data. So this is a map of the state of Washington showing the overdose death rates in counties throughout the state. The darker shades are indicating the highest rates of overdose fatality. You can see here that Clark County is kind of this medium pink shade. And so the five-year overdose fatality rate in Clark County was about 23 deaths per 100,000 population, which is a little bit lower than the Washington state average, which is about 33 per 100,000 population. And so while our Clark County rate is a little bit lower than the state, relative to other counties, we're about in the middle. We're not doing the best, and we're also not the worst in the state. But I did want to show this map to sort of illustrate some of the patterns that you can see here. When you look at the darkest shades, you see the highest shades on the west coast of the state overlapping with the I-5 corridor. And so Clark County, our department is going to be, is just exploring a new partnership with some of our public safety partners, including HIDA, to access mapping tools to help us track fatal and non-fatal overdose and overlay that with the distribution of illicit drugs throughout the state. So well, looking at the overdose death trends in Clark County, this chart shows us the number of deaths in Clark County between 2018 and 2023. And the dark teal line represents the total number of deaths due to any drug. And you can see that the number of deaths in Clark County has increased by about 160% from 61 deaths in 2018 to 158 deaths in 2023. The 2023 data is asterisk because it's still considered preliminary. It is subject to change and it will be finalized in the fall. But it does show this, you know, continuing increase in deaths in our community. The green and orange lines highlight the number of deaths that involved fentanyl and the number of deaths that involved methamphetamine over the last several years. And I've highlighted these two drugs, these drug categories, because they were the most common drugs that showed up in overdose deaths. Some of the other drug types that we're seeing in our fatality data include prescription opioids, sedatives, including benzodiazepines, as well as cocaine. But they do, but those drug types represent less than 20% of all fatalities, whereas fentanyl and methamphetamine represent about two-thirds of all deaths.
Quick question there. Can I ask a question
real
quick?
Sure.
Back on that previous slide, please. So does the total, does 158 total drug overdose deaths, but the fentanyl and methamphetamine combined together is more than 158? So I don't, I'm not following the math. They don't.
Yeah. Sorry. Thank you for asking. Yeah. Thank you for asking it. So the orange and green line, they overlap. So the orange line represents there are 100 fentanyl deaths that contributed to a death either alone or in combination with another drug. And then the same thing with methamphetamine. There were 98 deaths that contributed, where methamphetamine contributed to the death either alone or in combination with another drug. And so the next couple of slides, we're actually going to kind of focus on those deaths that involved multiple substances. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
And so this chart looks at overdose death involving multiple drugs as a percent of total overdose deaths. And so looking at that last bar for the 2023, there were a total of 158 drug deaths in 2023, and about 61% of those involved multiple substances. So the most common drug combination included both fentanyl and methamphetamine. And then, so if we go to the next slide, we can look at that breakdown. And so this top horizontal bar here shows all of the deaths that involved fentanyl in 2023. And so the breakdown is that about 23 deaths involved fentanyl alone. 64 deaths involved fentanyl with methamphetamine. And then about 16 deaths involved fentanyl and something else other than methamphetamine. And then you kind of see a similar analysis for the bar on the bottom for methamphetamine, where you see the majority of deaths that where methamphetamine was involved also involved fentanyl. And so we just, you know, all of this data really to illustrate that the most recent data are showing that both fentanyl and meth are involved in the majority of overdose deaths together.
Adiba, may I ask a question on that last slide?
Yes.
On the first box across where it has the fentanyl alone and fentanyl with meth and then fentanyl with other drugs, do you have the data to show if this is, or maybe the second box down, if it's drug laced with fentanyl unknowingly by the user, or if are these people taking multiple drugs from multiple sources and overdosing that way? Or is it a single drug that's been laced with fentanyl?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. I think, so from the data that we have access to locally, our medical examiner investigation data and our death certificate data, we're not able to tell whether they were laced or they were used together, but, the analysis, there are some drug checking analysis that's done by the University of Washington at various sites throughout the state. And the recent analysis from those findings are showing that these drugs are being taken together intentionally. They're not necessarily being, they're not showing up together in a single product. So at this point in time, that's kind of our understanding of these cases.
That answers my question. I didn't know if you had that information, but I appreciate it. Thanks.
And I also want to highlight that's a good question and a great example of a question that we really want to carry forward. And we'll mention more about this later to the conversation that we're going to have in October. And Dr. Fisher, it's my understanding that you'll be a part of that as well. So kind of deep diving into what we know, what we don't, and from what data sources around questions about adulterants that have been included in illegally or illicitly manufactured substances. So hold on to that question because we're going to dig into that in greater depth in future presentations.
All right. So now taking a look at what demographics are most impacted by our overdose deaths. When we look at rates by sex, we see that males are disproportionately impacted by drug overdose fatalities compared to females. When we look at age groups, our adults ages 25 to 54 are experiencing the highest rates of drug overdose from any drug. When we look at individual drug types, the patterns do look a little different. Historically, some of the majority of the fentanyl involved drugs do impact the 25 to 34 year olds the most, whereas the methamphetamine involved fatalities impact our older adults ages 45 to 54. And then when we look at race ethnicity, in our community, our non-Hispanic white community is impacted disproportionately by drug overdose deaths. And then we took a look at housing status based on our medical examiner investigation. And we found that the majority of our overdose deaths are occurring among people who were housed. And about 11% of all overdose fatalities in 2023 were among people experiencing homelessness. Housing status is determined by our medical examiner death investigators. And it's based on the information that they have available to them at the time of death. And now we'll take a look at some of the non-fatal overdose data that we have. This looks at the number of monthly EMS responses and the number of emergency department visits for suspected opioid overdose in Clark County. The time frame here is a little bit more current than our death data because we get this in a little bit more real time from our hospital partners and our EMS agencies. And so this is looking at the last 6 months of data. And you can see that, you know, on average, we have anywhere between 60 and 70 EMS opioid responses each month, and anywhere between 30 and 60 emergency department visits for suspected opioid overdose in a month. And we look at this data every month, and we do know that there kind of are some seasonal patterns where we tend to see an increase in overdose activity in the spring months. And so we saw an increase in over EMS opioid responses in April. We're starting to see some of those numbers come back down. So I want to talk a little bit about how we use all of this data to inform some of our prevention efforts. And so, like we described our data sources, we are routinely monitoring our data sources from mortality, from hospital, from EMS and 911. And we're doing that on a monthly basis for kind of internal reporting purposes. And what we've been doing is we are trying to detect increases in overdose activity relative to a baseline, and which we determine by looking at the last 6 months or last 12 months of activity. And in the event that we see elevated activity, we alert our key community partners and prepare messaging for our partners and the public to respond. And so I just wanted to share an example of a community response that we did last year. So last April, we were alerted to an elevated activity in terms of ED visits for opioid overdose in April of last year. And at that point, we had reviewed the data and validated the data from our hospitals. And we decided to prepare a press release to alert the public about the increase in activity. And this is an example of the press release that was put out at the time. And so this is our last slide for today. And I just want to kind of highlight that public health, we use surveillance and monitoring across the prevention and intervention continuum. So today we presented some of our Clark County overdose data trends as a first step before we hear from our local partners working in healthcare and community settings. Next month, we'll be reviewing the 2023 Healthy Youth Survey results along with our partners at the Educational Service District. And in the fall, we'll be planning for a presentation, I believe, with Dr. Fisher, who's here on the call today, to talk a little bit about local treatment and recovery trends with local behavioral health providers. I'm happy to take any questions about the data.
Thank you, Adiba. It sounds like you covered it very well, and nobody has any questions at this point. So it was really interesting. Andrea, did you have anything more to add?
No, not at this time. Thank you so much.
Covered it very thoroughly.
Yeah, so appreciate you coming to present. So we'll keep reviewing how the data relates to efforts in community and what that looks like, depending on what type of work our partners and our providers are doing. So it's a pretty big topic. So,
all right. Well, then we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is a budget update from Jeff.
Awesome. Hello. Thank you. It's great to see everybody. We have a balanced internal 2025 operating budget for the Public Health Fund. I was not able to share great details last month. We are eliminating a vacant position in the Administrative Services Division. There's not been a communication to staff, to all staff, but there will be soon. So we're eliminating three positions, two of which are vacant. We had our work session with the Board of Health on the environmental public health fee adjustments. They have given us the green light to bring forward the ordinance, which includes the addition of a new drinking water operations and maintenance program. It also includes two additional positions for food safety. So there's no reductions in environmental public health. I am seeing fee volume. I would say tabling. I'm a little concerned. We're coming in a little bit under expectations in a few programs, so I'm concerned about the economy as a whole. But for 2025, we're holding steady. We're actually adding a program. So the big issue of the day for us is looking forward. One of the reasons our 2025 budget is balanced is it does not include any cost of living adjustments for our represented staff. Our bargaining unit contract expires December 31st of this year. The contract negotiations have barely begun. They are not complete. We will not have 2025 cost of living adjustment impacts in the 2025 budget. So what that means is the contract will be ratified by the end of the year, and then the 2026 budget will include both the 2025 and 2026 cost of living allowances. So we're looking, my figures show we're looking at about a $2.2 million deficit for 2026. That is the beginning baseline deficit. Due to our space planning work, we're actually able to use, we're saving about $260,000 a year on space costs with our footprint, the work we've done on our space. We have a few vacant positions that we do not plan to fill that we can use to eliminate in that budget. We still have some very, very big lifts ahead of us in the 2026 budget process. Even with the projected fee increase, the fee adjustments, we're still out, you know, between $700,000 and about $1 million. So that's after we've taken everything that we can possibly take. We're still out. I met with the budget office this morning, our annual check-in with departments during the budget process and shared that with them. I did have the conversation with them about possibly indexing our general fund support. We received $1.986 million from the county in general fund support. That's been the number since roughly 2011, I believe. So like all of our other funding sources, federal, state grant revenues, they're pretty much flat. Once you get the revenue, the grant revenue, it's assigned. That's the amount you will get moving forward. I will say the budget office understands the ask, and they actually seem agreeable to at least continue the conversation. I may be asked to attend a meeting of the County Finance Committee. That is the county manager, the budget director, the county audit finance manager, and a representative from the treasurer's office to sort of lay that out. The concern, obviously, is that this is a Pandora's box. Once it's opened, we will not be the only ones asking. So there is some concern about what that would mean for the county general fund once they started something like this. So we do have a balanced budget we can live with for 2025. We're not asking FACT to testify or advocate for us for the 2025 budget. However, like I said, the 2026 budget is going to be very, very challenging. And just to lay the groundwork, the 2027 budget, I think I've mentioned this before, that's the first year we will not be able to draw on the American Rescue Plan Act or ARPA grant funding. So we have about $400,000 of annual systems maintenance for our three large software platforms that ARPA is paying for through 2026. 2027, that will fall to us. So 2026 will not be a regular budget. 2027 will not be a regular budget. And then 2028 will be back into, you know, roughly a $850,000 starting hole. So 26 and 27 will both be worse than that. So not a lot of fun ahead of us as far as budget goes. I've been here almost 26 years. I'm looking at probably the second most challenging budget stretch I've encountered since I got here. We had about a $6.1 million biennial budget deficit, beginning the 2007-08 biennial budget. That's when we transitioned out all of our clinical services, among other, our WIC program. It's not that bad. We're not looking at that big of a deficit, nor are we looking at elimination of services. But we do have some challenges ahead of us. We did the difficult space planning work. It is saving us $260,000. We did reduce our fleet of leased Konica multifunction printers. We, in our space planning work, something I haven't even shared with our leadership team yet, we just got a count. We are returning 29 monitors, which will save on what's called TERNR, which is Technology Equipment Replacement and Reserve. We pay a capital contribution for all of those devices. So we'll save some money there. We're turning over everything, trying to find every possible budget savings there is to avoid human impact. So luckily, 2025 we did okay with loss of three positions. It's never fun laying off a filled position, especially it was under my purview. I had to have the meeting myself. Obviously, it's never enjoyable. So I guess it's a good time for questions. We're right in the middle of the budget process. I've got to have everything entered into the county budget system in about 3 weeks. I'm just about beginning the process of taking all of our budget data and doing a crosswalk versus the county budget and then creating the entries needed to get our county budget to match our department budget. So any questions? Sorry, I know I said a lot. Hope I didn't put anyone to sleep. It's been, we've had several years of, I don't want to say easy budgets. We've had several years of budgets without this kind of challenges. When we took on the solid waste fund, for example, that expanded, the department into areas where we could charge indirects to a bigger swath. We took on the medical examiner's office, which came with the same benefit. We then got 3 years of foundational public health services grant revenue, where, like I said before, we went from, you know, $275,000 to just under $7 million a year in three budgets. The COVID pandemic, obviously it was difficult for the world. The public health budget actually helped our budget. The grant revenues that were available, we were able to pay for things that would have previously been paid for through overhead, for example. So we've been able to avoid really, really difficult, challenging budgets for quite a while. And next year is going to be the most challenging one I've seen in a long time. Councillor Marshall.
Yes, thanks. I thought of a few questions. I wonder, is there any chance that in the next few years those foundational public health dollars could increase from the state?
I find that very, very unlikely of that. I find it more likely that we could actually see a state agency claw back some of those funds. I think honestly what will happen is we will not see a change. Okay. The state is, we have our monthly finance meeting with Department of Health. We just had that last Wednesday. They are having budget challenges at the state level as well. There are other priorities. Housing, education are rising, it looks like. I don't think we're going to see any increases in foundational public health services. Andrea, do you have a reason to not agree with me there, or is there something you're hearing that would?
No, I think your assessment is accurate. I think there would have to be a shift in allocation of existing financial resources, and there are conversations about the redistribution of all of the funds available to state and local public health agencies. So it's not something that I think is likely.
Great.
Andrea are both on different subject matter expert groups, so I wanted to ask her if she's heard anything to, yeah. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, just one more question. I was wondering about the cost of living expenses that you indicated You'd have to take both years in 2026. Is there a possibility, I don't know if this would help or not, but to kind of smooth things out so that you're not taking the total hit in 2026, if there could be a budget adjustment sometime in 2025 when you know those numbers?
You know, that would be a question for the budget office and the county manager, I would say. Honestly, I'd rather them happen in 2026 than the 2025 budget. With Baker Tilly, I was actually really dreading Baker Tilly and the 2025 COLA in the same budget. So actually, I think we got lucky. Our 2025 budget would have been worse. 2026 is going to be just as bad as 2025 would have been had there been a COLA and the impact from Baker Tilly. Excellent question. I would, if the county manager and the budget office have a strategy that would help, I'm fully on board.
Yeah. And you're right in your assessment that if one department, things open up for one department, all departments will come in. And I think last year there was about 100 FTE that were requested that didn't get funded. So it's tough.
Yeah. What I heard in my budget office meeting today is that there basically is resources to fund the existing county as it is structured for a couple more budgets. And then they're dipping into fund balance. So they have a structural budget deficit as well. I'm hoping that there's not a general fund directive where everybody receiving general fund is asked to put up cuts. That's what I'm hoping to avoid because our budget is going to be challenging enough already. So
even with going into a balanced budget in 2025, there still may be a good reason to communicate with the council.
Yep. I will take every opportunity to share the future challenges that we have ahead of us.
Yeah. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on our budget outlook or anything about the budget process? Okay, so the public hearing for the budget is still the first week of December. I have to have everything submitted by August 12th. The county manager's recommended budget will post in November. So we will share along the way any major updates as the process unfolds.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. And do you still want your budget committee to hang on at after the meeting to have a short check-in?
Yeah, I can. Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. So anyone that's on the budget committee or who is interested in being on the budget committee, there will be a short committee meeting time after we adjourn the main meeting. So anyway, just hang on at the end of the meeting. I also see Dr. Chong joined us, and I just want to welcome you to the meeting and glad you could make it.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Our icebreaker today, maybe you could join share with us. Our icebreaker today is, what is a weird fact that you'd like to share with us that you know?
Just any weird fact?
Any weird fact, yeah.
Well, I know that I think the Peruvians used to drill into teeth to put stones in them. I don't think they had local anesthesia, and it was just purely for aesthetics. There was no reason for it whatsoever.
Yikes. All right. That is a weird fact. Thanks. All right. Moving on to committee updates. You did receive a copy of the draft bylaws revisions, and we've spent a couple of meetings going over these bylaw revisions. And the main focus of this revision is to change our decision-making model from Robert's Rules of Order to a consensus method. And a meeting, I think at the last meeting, I went over each of the changes that we're going to make. Since that meeting, we did, Marla and Peggy and I met and did come up with some wording for when we know consensus is reached. So it would be under Article 8, Section 2, which is on the second page. Consensus is going to be reached when members present vote to support or allow, with no more than two members voting to block. And if the public health leadership team or the FAC executive committee determine that there's a topic or an issue where we need to have 100% support or allow, we'll be sure to let people know that before we start the conversation. And then the last one is, if a member needs to be absent, they can provide a proxy vote prior to the meeting, and they need to submit it to either the Carp County Public Health Leadership Team or the FAC executive meeting. So if you know there's going, because it's always going to be on the agenda that we're going to vote on something, and you want to have your vote as support, allow, block, or you need more information, then you can let someone know on the leadership team or the FAC executive team prior to that meeting. So those were the changes that we made since we went over the initial changes. At this point, if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to entertain them, or Marla would as well. We will be bringing this for a vote at the August meeting. So this gives you the 21 days prior notice for us to vote. And Tyler, you have a question.
Yeah, so you said there will be some topics that require 100% consensus. Is that what I heard you say?
There could be, you know, we never know, but there could be an issue or a vote where we really want 100% consensus on something. So if the leadership team and or the exec team, as we're going over different things that might need to be brought before the before the committee, and we feel it's 100% needed, then we would be sure to let you know that.
So it's determined by either the executive committee or the leadership team, you said?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Anybody else have any questions? You do have a copy of what those changes are. And so if you haven't had a chance to look at them before this meeting, be sure to look at them before our next meeting. We'll go through them at the next meeting, and we'll have a vote to move from Robert's rules to consensus decision-making model. And if you have any questions in between time, be sure to let Marla or myself know what your questions are, and we'll see if we can address those. Okay. Emily is going to talk about the Board of Health retreat planning. So we have an ad hoc committee that's working on planning the Board of Health training or retreat next year. And Emily is on that committee, so she's going to report what's going on.
Yeah, sorry, give me one second because I lost my spot in this. Sorry. I'm so sorry. I had the thing right in front of me and I'm trying to find the email. We were talking about the date that this would be and who else might join that committee last I checked.
The committee member, do you want me to go over the committee members while you look for that? The committee members right now is Counselor Marshall and Counselor Young, Emily, Brian, Nyssa, and Roxanne. And Roxanne will kind of be the chair of that committee at this point. And if anybody else is interested in joining, I'm sure that they'll take more.
Yes. There I have it. Okay. I don't know what else I was supposed to talk to about that. I just know about it. Sorry.
Yeah, kind of about how the committee is going to put this together is that the planning committee is going to decide on the date and the length, kind of decide on when they want to do it and how long they want it to be. Is it a half a day? Is it a couple of hours? Is it a full day retreat? What are some potential training activities or a high level agenda that might occur for this training? There's been a lot of conversation over the past year for the new members or as others that haven't been part of this conversation. There's been a lot of conversation about how the Board of Health and FAC can have a closer working relationship. And so this training and retreat is going to be our first step to building that new relationship. And so we want to start the planning now. It probably won't happen until probably the first quarter of next year, because we'll have two new counselors next year. So involving them in the training would be helpful. Clark County Public. You got it?
You got it. Sorry. Yeah. I did. So I think we would like to have a few more meetings in July and early August on that. And if you do want to be on that committee, as you just read out, Nyssa, and we have a couple others that are on there. I think something that we've all kind of voiced is that there's kind of a communication breakdown with us and the Board of Health. And so for us to be able to have this kind of meeting space together to both literally meet everyone and have what some shared goals or shared visions are, but it's really something for us to create. So if you want to be part of that, you know, either figuring out how do we build that relationship and what are the steps we want to propose and what would we like to do during that retreat to get there, that's something that you could participate in. The Clark County Public Health staff is going to take care of the logistics of this. So don't think that you're signing yourself up for a really big workload. It's more of a vision casting and what we want to do to build that relationship. Did I get that right?
All right. So that's kind of a work in progress. But again, if anybody's interested in helping out with that, just let Emily or Roxanne know. And I think that Roxanne's going to set up some meetings, probably not till early August at this point. Okay. The last one on committee reports is about a Board of Health training, a statewide Board of Health training. Last year it was held at Semiahmoo, and I think Elma and Peggy attended that. I don't know who else from the FAC attended last year. But it's going to be held again this year in Leavenworth, and it's October 1st through the 3rd. And so if you think you might be interested in going to that training, we just need to let Mallory or Roxanne know, and then they'll let you know what the parameters on it. Elma, do you want to say anything about your experience last year at this training and what it's all about? I didn't get to go, so.
Yeah, sure. Marla was also there. Yeah. And one of the highlights of last year's meeting was we did some training from a couple of folks from the CDC actually came and trained us on public health law, as well as emergency communications. So it was very interesting. And then we did a little bit of, you know, some, I don't know, the cafe roundtables with other counties' public health departments, which was very interesting from a networking standpoint. So I would highly recommend going, because you meet a lot of really, really neat people in public health.
Marla, did you have anything else to add?
I would echo everything Elma said there. That was really the biggest part of it. But in the process of doing those things, there was an opportunity to just network with other counties about how, for instance, their Board of Health interfaces with their Public Health Advisory Council or reasonable facsimile. Not every county is structured just the way we are. So that was interesting too, to hear about some of the differences. But we have common themes like budget difficulties. That's probably, you know, something that every public health department runs into at times. But it was really educational, and there were many takeaways. So I do hope that people can make time to attend it. I think it was helpful that we actually had a few people from Peggy was there, Elma, myself, and it seems like there were a couple more, but it was very valuable having more than just one or two. I think if we can get a few, that would be really good.
So it would be really helpful for someone from Board of Health to go, because one thing that was missing last year was I don't think anyone from Board of Health went, and I think that'd be really helpful that Board of Health was there, someone from the Board of Health was there.
I'm actually thinking of going. I've been looking at that, so I appreciate this feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were opportunities to kind of interface with the Board of Health members from your county, and they didn't get that chance. So that might help with the retreat planning as well.
True.
So, I think when Roxanne or Dr. Melnick or Mallory get an agenda, we can share it with folks too, and that might help us see what's going to be on the agenda. But if you think you might be interested, let Mallory or Roxanne know, and it's likely that we'll bring it up again next month. But Dr. Melnick has just gotten the notification that it'll be in Leavenworth October 1st through the 3rd. So
logistically, what does that look like to attend? As it's like, you know, a multi-day kind of thing.
That I don't know.
Okay.
Last year it was at Semiahmoo, so that was what, about 5 hours away. So we just all drove up there. And everything was provided for us. Because it came out of the Public Health Foundation. And I don't know. So there was funding for us. And so it was the lodging was provided for, and the food was also provided for.
Is that?
And Dr. Melnick said he was hoping that they'd be able to do that for members again this year. So
Okay. Mileage was reimbursed as well.
Yeah. He just wasn't sure when we talked the other day. So
if we receive any additional information, I will try to send it out in the minutes, but I can't guarantee that we'll have more information
mm-hmm.
prior to then. So any information we get, we'll be sure to share with everyone.
Mm-hmm. And there might be time to have more details at the August meeting. So, alrighty. We're coming to the end of our agenda. Now's the time where we kind of have member or community updates. So if anyone has an update that they want to share from with the group, now would be the time. No community updates. Or just all enjoying summer. All right. Our next meeting is going to be August 27th, and this will be an in-person meeting, and it'll be held at the Center for Community Health in Conference Room 210. And so you'll be getting some more directions with your invitation to the meeting about how to get there and parking and so on. It kind of is going to feel like, for some of us, feel like old home week, because this is where we used to meet every month. And we haven't met there since long before COVID. So it'll kind of be nice to be back there, I guess. So anyway, it's August 27th. We'll probably have a meal, so we'll probably start around 5 with dinner, with the meeting starting at 5:30.
So, and I did include, sorry, Sandy, did include the address in the invite. So if you guys don't see it, let me know. But I did update it last month to reflect the appropriate address, so you know where you're going.
Well, if we don't have anything else to add, we'll go ahead and adjourn the July meeting. And anyone on the budget? Oh, yes.
Go ahead. Okay, great. I just didn't want to miss an opportunity.
So hello, everybody. Jeff Murray here. I'm sure most people have seen the public announcement, but I have announced my retirement, which will be effective October 11th. So what I've communicated to Dr. Melnick is Vancouver Police will continue to have somebody through the remainder of the year in my absence. And then I've asked the Law Enforcement Council, last meeting here was last week, that maybe someone else might, we have some new chiefs in Clark County that might want to step up and fill the role of public safety for this group. So if you haven't seen that news, and I'm telling it for the first time, I apologize. But it's been 31 years, and just a lot of stuff going on the last 12 months for me personally. I know Andrea's familiar with a lot of the things going on, but it's time to just spend more time with the family. So thank you, everybody.
Well, congratulations, and I hope you enjoy your time with family. We will definitely miss you on FAC, but we get to see your face till October, right?
That's correct. October 11th will be my last day.
All right. Well, we'll get to see you in person in August, so we'll look forward to that. So
sounds good.
All right. Anyone else? Want to cut anybody short? All righty. Until next month when we meet in person, have a great month. And anybody on the budget committee or interested in it, please stay on the Zoom, and Jeff will be taking over that piece of it. So have a good evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Adiba.
Thank you, Adiba.